Welcome to Imagine This Podcast,
the show where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredibly vibrant arts and culture community in a new way.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome to Imagine This Podcast. I'm Lindsay, and I have with me, as usual today, Mac, David. Hello there.
Hey, y'all.
Hello. So good to be here. And also, what a nice change it is for Lindsay to actually read us into the top of the show.
It only took us five takes, but yes, still delightful after the fifth take.
I thought it was eight, but I think I lost count.
This is only reinforcing Lindsay's building her confidence and wanting to do that role. Hey, everybody. Let's just get into it. No need for our listeners to be exposed to the machinations of Imagine MKE. That's another podcast. Imagine MKE, the staff dynamics. Let's just keep it to the content, everybody.
I'm going to keep trying this new thing where I talk first. So
go for it.
Anyway, per my usual style, we're going to get right to the point, folks. Right to the point. We have some pretty incredible guests today from Summerfest. Sarah Smith-Pancheri, who's the COO and VP of Sales and Marketing, and Bob Bavish, who's the VP of Entertainment. So Mac and I have a really awesome conversation with them about their significant changes to Summerfest over the past couple of years, their love of music. I mean, we could have gone on. I really wanted to get deep into learning about Bob's booking process and whatnot, but I restrained myself a little bit. But pretty great conversation, Mac. So we'll look forward to that. But we wanted to get into that in the spirit of
I got to tell you, just really quickly, I was unable to be a part of this interview, but Sarah is like one of my favorite people in the Milwaukee arts and culture scene, right? So this is going to be a real treat for everybody.
It's a real treat. They're both terrific, and it was lovely. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be after the break. That's right. But before that, let's keep it on the Summerfest theme, y'all. And we're going to do a not a true draft. In the sense, but we're going to just, what's our picks to click? We got the Summerfest schedule in front of us, and we want to share with you, our lovely viewers and listeners, what we're excited about coming up. Besides the fact that we're actually going to have a Summerfest, we're excited that it's innovative in the sense of, as opposed to consecutive days in a row, it's three weekends in September. So it gives a little time to breathe between what you recover, you know, and hydrate before we take on the next one. We're just going to jump into it. And David will put in the links. You could play along at home if you'd like. You can link along and take a look at the schedule. But the first weekend, September 2nd to September 4th, a big one before Labor Day. Mm-hmm. You know, I just noticed in real time, we're creating new memories. We're creating new traditions because we've never done this before. So
we've never done this. Yeah.
I'm assuming this is a pretty big one. Everybody's going to be ready to go Labor Day weekend. So everybody's going to be sauced, right? Jacked up. An extra broad, if you will. So we're going to go around and go like, what is a show, it could be one band or maybe a specific set of shows you're excited to see. And who's ready to tee it off? What are you excited to see that weekend?
Well, that first weekend, I think I'm going to camp out at the BMO Harris stage on the 3rd. That headlining night opens with Yola at 4, who's an incredible British artist. I saw her at 930 Club in DC, one of my last pre-pandemic indoor shows. And she has, just this incredibly soulful voice, somehow also influenced by country, like really just this incredible combination of sounds. And then Leon Bridges later that night. So I'm excited about that one.
And I'm going to add this innovation because we didn't talk about this in the pre-show, Lindsay. You could also recommend a show for me and David. Well, I'll recommend a show that based off we know, you should go see them, right?
I'd really like for you guys to go see T-Pain together.
I'm going to be the one with a sign that says, I'm just here for I'm in love with a stripper. Like that's the one track I'm here for. And then I'm just here the whole time. That's good. David, how about you? What are you looking to see? And then give a recommendation to Lindsay and me that we should see. Because
I am personally really interested in seeing Steely Dan, the Steely Dan cover band. Because for those of you who know me, right, I love Steely Dan. the jazz rock smooth fusion of Walter Becker and Donald Fagen is deep in my heart. So APM at the BMO Harris Pavilion. However, for you and Lindsay, definitely Flo Rida, because I think Lindsay's got a deep love in her heart potential for Flo Rida.
Yes, I think that's right. We'll be there at that Flo Rida, and I just want to hear My House, because that song doesn't get played enough at stadiums across the country.
That's right.
At football stadiums, we don't hear My House enough. It's not, you know, side note, David, I was in a deep conversation with somebody last night about where does Flo Rida sit in the canon. I mean, when we look back on this time, where do we look at Flo Rida? So I think you picked up on it.
Flo Rida is definitely in the pantheon of Mr. Worldwide, right? Like, they're sort of in the same kind
we,
of
like, instead of you lifted that, because we were going like Flo Rida and Pitbull are of a certain type, right? That's a certain genre of like, right. It's almost like self-aware pop music. Like, they're building it and they know that they're doing a thing. And we don't know if it's performance art or if it's actually the music itself. So
I think it's a little bit of both.
I think it is a little bit of both. Awesome. That's great. So yeah, Lindsay, let's plan for Miller at Oasis 10 p.m. on Saturday night. There's a lot of great acts. And I had to pick one that I'm kind of big on seeing. I'll see you on Friday night at the Johnson's Control, 8 p.m. Indigo Girls, yes. Baby. I'm an Amy. Some people are an Emily. I'm an Amy. And I'm going to be so the track I'll be going like play not Closer to Find. No, it's going to be Least Complicated. I'm going to play Least Complicated. Play it. I'm going to be that annoying guy in the back. David, I really want you to go see REO Speedwagon on Thursday night. You know, keep on loving you. And I think no joke. I think you'd really dig. I'm looking at this right now. Cold War Kids, Lindsay, 10 p.m. I think you'd like Cold War Kids and their indie stylings and their indie rock stylings.
I do like Cold War Kids.
I think you'd dig them.
Shall we move on to the next weekend?
Go for it, Lindsay. I can start. We can rotate it around to make it fair. You don't always have to go.
Oh, I got one.
Go ahead. Tell us about 9th, 10th, and 11th. This is 9th.
Okay, so moving to next weekend. First of all, as you'll hear more about in the interview, you know, this change to having some time to recover between weekends does sound pretty great. Like, we're going to be queued up to go back for more music a week later. So there's a band. Oh man, this is a great weekend, actually. How do I choose? First off, Classic and Tank and the Bangas back to back. Definitely will be there. That sounds pretty awesome. However, I also got to go to 6 p.m. On the U.S. Cellular Connection stage, the Nikhil Kurula Band. So you've maybe not heard of them, but a while ago, probably 15 years ago, I was in San Francisco on a family vacation, and we wandered into like a coffee shop music venue kind of place. And this band was playing, the Nikhil Kurula Band. We were totally charmed. We had no idea like who they were, stayed for a while, bought an album. So like, we have this album from this band in my parents' house. And they're this like kind of this jazz jam band vibe. Really great. So I'm surprised and delighted to see them on the Summerfest lineup. So check them out.
Who should we see?
Oh, okay. I think probably, let's see. I think David should go to the back-to-back Hotel California Salute to the Eagles and Green Sky Bluegrass. something about David, I think maybe he actually would be into like jam bands like Green Sky Bluegrasses.
He's really containing his face right now. He's like, how dare you say that I'm a jam band?
I don't know if you know them well, but I think they're kind of like the bluegrass version of Fish.
That reads as David. David's gonna be there with his hacky sack and his
His
Camelback, backpack, you know, sipper.
I think you could be into it. I think you could.
He's gonna break up the ultimate frisbee.
And I mean, Mac, if you're not already gonna say this, I think you're probably gonna be at Wilco. On Saturday night.
That's a good guess. That's a really good guess.
Yeah. I'll turn it over to one of you.
I will be at Wilco on the 10th. you know, I think I listened to this really interesting podcast with Jeff Tweedy a couple of weeks ago. He was on with Ezra Klein. He talked a lot about creativity, right? And the ways in which he stays creative through his work. And, you know, just thought that was incredibly powerful and very, very fun. So, and love Wilco.
I should have known. That's on like the David Bingo card. Like,
yeah, that's right.
Jeff Tweedy. Sorry.
That is on the David Bingo card.
I would invite you, Lindsay, to join me and Mac at Brew City Wrestling
on the
Gruber stage on Thursday and Friday in the afternoon or in the early evening.
Oh man,
the events time.
I'm hoping it's like a Texas tornado match or something that includes blading. I'm so hoping there's blood. I'm hoping they're drawing blood tonight.
I think you're speaking a different language right now. So I'll come, but I'm gonna need some help understanding.
I don't know if it's I'm in this nostalgia trip, but I'm really intrigued. There's a lot of great acts. As I always say, there's a lot of great acts, but they got Live in Color at 6 p.m. at the U-Line Warehouse on 9/11, and like I'm ready for A Letter to a Landlord. This is my running bet. I want to hear Letter to a Landlord.
They have to play that whole album, right?
Yeah, but just play front to back. Yeah, just play Vivid front to back. Or Living Color. Vivid was their second album, right? So whatever. Living Color. Awesome. Cult of Personality. Oh my gosh. I would like lose my mind when you just hear that. So that's me. Lindsay, I think you should go see Kesha just so that you can bring back the times, your youth.
Your youth.
I don't know if your Kesha was breaking, but I think it'll invite you to be excited. And David, I think you should go. See Soul Asylum at 4 p.m. on September 9th, because I think that's on brand for you. Kind of, you know, angsty
90s
angsty rock. Minnesota mope rock. You know that's on brand. That's on your playlist there. The Runaway Train. We'll be playing that. At some point, hopefully far, far in the future, for you. All right, so there you go. That's that. Let's shift to the final weekend, 9/16, 9/17, 9/18. I'll start because I haven't had a chance to start first. Mm-hmm. I'll refer to this later in the conversation, but I was so excited to see on the Miller Lite Oasis stage, 6 p.m., Joan, probably the one band I'm so excited about in 2020, 2021, around this time. They're a duo from Arkansas. Just makes awesome music, pop music. And they're also paired that night, Bleachers at 10 p.m. So I'm going to stick around for the rest of that night. I'm so jacked for that. Lindsay, I want you to go see Mother Mother at 4 p.m. It's an outfit out of Canada. Really interesting. No, there's no bit. I like it's actually pretty interesting instrumentation. Good stuff. And David, you're going to go see the Spin Doctors at 4 p.m.
Yeah.
At the U-Line Warehouse. Little Miss Can't Be Wrong. That's going to be it. Like, got to play Little Miss Can't Be Wrong. What about you, David?
You know, the last weekend's a bit of a monster weekend, right? Like, I have a hard time kind of like choosing between what's happening at the Generac stage with Thurston Moore and the Pixies on the 18th.
Is this your way of like having multiple choices?
Yeah, I'm going to pick the whole bingo board on this that's one, right? So obviously Gold and Fits in the Tantrums on the Briggs & Stratton Big Backyard. And then of course, the Psychedelic Furs, one of my favorite bands ever. Of course, as someone in my mid-40s, all I want is for them to just play the greatest hits. In fact, if they just played Heartbreak Beat on a loop, I'd be happy. And for you both, certainly, I think Lindsay ought to check out Diplo.
Yeah.
At 10 yes. p.m. on 9/16, I think.
Bring your glow sticks.
Yeah,
that's glow sticks.
And then you, Mac, you got to go check out Ludacris.
Yes. Isn't that Chris Bridges to you?
It's Chris Bridges. Otherwise, also known as the star of the Fast and the Furious movies.
Yes, Luda. It's gonna be a good set. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm Lindsay. Go ahead.
Well, I love the Black Pumas, so yes. High likelihood that I will be at that show at 9:30 on the BMO Harris Pavilion stage. I think we're gonna send Mac to Future Islands.
Yeah.
Dadcore.
We're your Dockers. We're your Dockers and loose fitting t-shirts, everybody.
And let's get a Milwaukee band in there. David, you should go to De La Buena at 4 p.m. on the Miller Lite Oasis stage on the 18th. So there we go. That's just some of the amazing bands. As I continue to look, I think, gosh, should have mentioned You Win, who's performing on the second.
Of course, you win. Of course, You Win.
Gotta go see them.
Yep.
So we've just scratched the surface of a pretty incredible lineup.
That's right.
Well, listeners, let us know what you're going to be watching. You're going to be coming out to, and you know, if maybe we could work it right. You can't make it. You know, tell me which one you want to go to and like send me some money and I'll just stream it on my phone. And then you can.
Yeah. Well, let us know.
That's illegal, right? That's highly illegal, isn't it? That's highly
let us know in the comments where folks want to go and who they want to see. And then maybe we'll meet you there and record live podcast.
We'll record a podcast during the concert.
That's right.
Just between each song. We'll just do a thing.
Guys, we can't afford the rights for the songs from the bands we would catch in the background. So
we'll just do the first 5 seconds and then we just cut away and then we'll just do. We don't have to have it solved now, but you get what I want. So listeners, let us know what you want to see. But you know what I want to see is I want to get into the interview. We're really excited to have, after the break, Bob Babish and Sarah Smith-Pancheri. Bob is a over four decades of work at the Milwaukee World Festival Incorporated, a highly respected member of the entertainment industry. In addition to leading music production team during Summerfest, he also oversees the music portion events held at the Henry Meyer Festival Park, BMO Harris Pavilion, and at the American Family Insurance Amphitheater throughout the summer season. He's worked with acts like the Rolling Stones, Pink, Paul McCartney, Bon Jovi, Bruno Mars. I mean, like tons of awards and Grammys of the folks he's had a chance to work with. But he's also homegrown. Had his BFA from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. We're also excited to have Sarah Pancheri, who is the Chief Operating Officer and Vice President in Sales and Marketing at Milwaukee World Festival, Inc. Also served, she also worked there earlier in her career. So it's a lovely chance of starting there and coming back, but she's also done stops at the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Milwaukee, Marquette University, and also has done worked at the United Performing Arts Fund. So both these folks are pillars of our arts and culture scene. And we're excited to have them after the break. Get to meet Bob and Sarah. Welcome, Bob and Sarah, to the pod.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks for joining us. You are on the HQ, right? Milwaukee World Festival HQ, the home
Indeed.
Of Summerfest.
Yep. The heart of it. 639 East Summerfest Place. We're here.
It's happening.
Getting ready to roll.
I just imagine that there's huge Marshall stacks every hall. It's just blaring, pumping out music all the time. Or is that just a fantasy I have? That's what it's always like at.
Well, there's some music pumping out, but usually it's outside. So.
You know, when certain people get into their zones, you definitely hear different musical interludes coming out of different offices.
Awesome. Well, we're so excited to have you both here to talk about Summerfest and to talk about not just the importance of the event itself, but the nuances and leadership you'll have to exercise to be agile. As it is called the big gig. And I imagine as gigs go, it's like a battleship, right? There's just so many wheels upon wheels upon wheels. But for you all to be so agile and nimble and able to make sure the Milwaukee has its tradition, it's important gig for, gosh, over half a century. We're going to have it back. So thanks to the leadership of y'all. We're so excited to talk about that. But I'll defer to Lindsay because I like to call this the Lindsay Sheridan question. This is Shoe Brown. So I'll turn it over to Lindsay.
Well, we're really appreciative of you being here and taking some time away during what I can only imagine is just constant insanity leading up to less than a month out from Summerfest starting. But we'll get deep into that, but wanted to start out with asking you from a personal perspective to think back to a story of an arts and culture experience that left a really strong imprint on you. What's some grounding that led you to this work you do and this love of music now?
Sarah, you want to go first?
No, Bob, you go ahead.
Okay. I've been doing this for a long time. I mean, I've been at Summerfest for 43 years. And before that, when I came out of college, I was working with a rock and roll promoter here in Milwaukee called Daydream Productions. And as that gradually was coming to an end, I was moonlighting at the time and then went to work for a company called the Edgewood Agency.
Yeah.
And the Edgewood Agency, we did Broadway shows, ballet companies, and the like, you know. So I went from a rock business to doing Vladimir Horowitz or American Ballet Theater or the Alvin Ailey Dance Company.
Wow.
And I had never been involved in that before, that piece of the world, right? Yeah. I mean, I have a theater degree. I have an acting degree from UWM. And, but I had never really got into watching the professional side of that and watching the passion that people have for that. And especially the dance companies. Dance companies, I mean, I found a new love for ballet, which I certainly didn't have before that, right? I liked theater, I liked musical theater, I liked serious theater, but I never really had a love for that or symphony music. And I started to see what it was and how it impacted the community. And not just from, you know, the big donor piece of it, which is there, of course, for all of it, but the love of the dance, the love of the theater, and the love of the music. And it changed me for what I started to listen to and watch and what I liked, which was really an important piece because it started to well-round me in my musical style, likes, dislikes, whatever you want. And it came out in my kids. And we can talk about that, you know, later, I'm sure about it too. But I mean, their love for different styles of music, their love for theater and all those things. So it was an eye-opening moment for Bob Babish when he was like 26.
I have to imagine that the rider for the Alvin Ailey company is probably pretty intense. It's like only green M&Ms and
No, it wasn't
sculptures in the lobby all the time. And
no, it wasn't quite like that. You know, it was in those days, it was very hard for those people it was hard to get enough money to survive for those dance companies. Mm-hmm. I mean, they weren't surviving and thriving because they were going into 2,500 seat venues when they were on the road. I mean, in New York, when they were home, it's all fine because the money is there. But when you're back, when you're out on the road there, it becomes an expensive ticket because they have a lot of expenses to survive on the road. And one of the things I did notice right away from the promoter side is you can lose a lot of money doing a national ballet company.
Yeah.
And there's nobody there to help you with subsidies when you lose a lot of money with a national ballet company. But the people that I worked with at that time had such a love for it that we would go back and do it again, you know, do it again and do it again.
Yeah. Like a labor of love.
It was
a book like that kind of act.
And when I first saw some of these people, when I first saw some of these dancers leap, it was like, what? You know, I was used to watching basketball players. I went, what? Look at that. And then you found a new fun love for it. Yeah.
Awesome.
Bob, I'm curious when you talk about exposing your kids to the sort of art and music that you loved, what were some of the things you prioritized that maybe that you felt like you had to go out of your way to, like, I want to make sure that they see this?
You know, I didn't have to really do that because it was there, right? I mean, the school programs for music in this city are, I think, very, very good. I mean, there was a part here now when the money fell off and some of the schools had a hard time getting band gear and things like that, but they worked their way. It's worked its way out a little bit, but my kids all played. My daughter was orchestra. My son was in band. There were instruments all over the house. There were albums all over the house. And they went from, you know, my son is from liking rock and liking jazz. And my daughter likes the classics. She listens to classical music. They both love vinyl. They both play, you know, 3-4 instruments a piece. And it just kind of came from it being around, and they found their love. She likes theater. He likes what he does. And I think that comes, a lot of that came from well-rounded music and theater programs in the schools. I mean, I'll give you a quick piece about that.
Yeah.
My son went to a middle school in Glendale, right?
Yeah.
And he played in this jazz. I'm sorry if I'm taking up too much of the time here, Sarah.
No.
We're good, Sarah. Sarah's going to get equal time.
I'm on a soapbox for a second. But my son went to a Glendale middle school.
Yeah.
And they had this wonderful big band jazz program.
Mm.
And these kids were like, you know, eighth grade, ninth grade. And when you were in this thing, everybody soloed. No matter what your level was on that instrument, everybody soloed. So by the time he got to Nicolet, people were still soloing. And what that did for him was he never was scared of getting up in front of an audience. You know, I'd say to him, he's giving a speech. I go, you're nervous? I go, no, I'm not going to be nervous at all. Why? I'm just getting up and doing my thing. It's like he learned that from the music program. Yeah. You know, so it took him later. It took him in another direction in life. That's good.
Look at that. Shout out to Nicolet. Shout out to that district. Shout out to that district. That again, some love.
Sarah, how about you?
Yeah, you know, and I'll probably say it a few times in this podcast, following Bob Babish, given his incredible legacy, is always...
He's an old man, is what you're saying. He's an old man.
No. I have a chance to sit around and listen to Bob's stories. They're absolutely, it's a treat. But what I'll say is I'll offer some perspective from when I was a kid all the way to actually last night. And so... you know, I was really fortunate. I am a great fan. I have such appreciation for people that can create, because it's just not a gift I was given. And I realized that pretty early. So I have such a, like Bob was talking about, just the passion people have and the work ethic and the time and the perfection that it takes to be a creator is just such a beautiful thing. And I firmly believe that, but what I focus on a lot is the transformative nature of what music and art does. And that goes back to, and I'm not going to get the year right, but it was definitely a station wagon. And it was definitely a tape. And it was a bootleg tape of Springsteen and the E Street Band. Alpine Valley. My mother.
Wasn't that illegal?
I have no idea how it came to be. Right? Like I was like, isn't this? I mean, even at that age, I knew that was not exactly what was supposed to happen. But I was given this gift of appreciation and love of music for my mom, who just, I mean, it was before it was cool. She was jamming out in that car with someone. With an artist that she felt was, you know, spoke to her. And so fast forward many, many concerts and many, many personal experiences appreciating art and music. Last night, we had a show at the amphitheater, the beautiful new American Family Insurance Amphitheater, by the way, which I hope we'll talk about. And there's this moment before any performance, lights go down and you just can feel, it's a visceral feeling of anticipation for whatever art form you're gonna experience. In this case, it happened to be rock and roll, but that is probably the best part of our job, right? Like Bob and I get to create that moment for people and people that do it across the country and in Milwaukee and all over. It's just such a special thing. So I got to tell you, like, I really get a charge out of that. Like being able to deliver that for people is really cool. So I guess, yeah, it's because I can't do it. Bob can play. Bob's kids can play and act, and they're so creative. That's just not a gift I have. So, I love that people get to experience their best selves through music. It's like one of the best things ever.
There is not a set of speakers, and there is not a video screen that can replace the live event. It just can't. There's something about that. Right there, it gets it. The minute it starts up. There's something about it, and that's why we all do it.
Yeah,
that's why we like being on the producing side and putting events together. We make a lot of people very happy.
Yeah. And this is a great town for that too, right? This is such a great live performance town, and so with the legacy that it spans all this. And so let's transition to that. This is not my way of saying you're old. You just got deep roots. We heard UWM cited. We heard, you know, we heard deep ties, you know, like as I scanned your bios. I mean, you all have tread a path, you know, through the sector. So you've seen it in all different corners, all different ways. And I'm really curious about this polarity of what's the same and what's the change, right, that you've witnessed over this time. And so we'll start with you, Sarah. Like what would you say is constant since your time, you know, back in the day? It's a general back in the day. We're not going to give specific dates, but is there something that's really specific about Milwaukee that still in 2021 is very alive and vibrant to you from where you hold your role?
Yeah. And we'll hit the Bob after that. for sure. For perspective, I've been around for about 20 years, not quite as long as Bob, but I think we have great fans in this community. People show up and they love music and they love the experience and all the things that we were just talking about in terms of live, right? It's where it's at. We've grown up with this. I mean, the community has helped curate this festival and the entire arts community for so many years. We've got great benefactors in this community. I mean, the fact that donors and corporations step up to make sure that Milwaukee has the access it does is tremendous. And I don't think, you know, if you come from a different place, you may not see that as readily. So I think, you know, just the entire scene is held up by a genuine love of gathering. I think the compulsion to gather in Milwaukee is something that is, in particular with COVID, was really hard because people just have this idea that, you know, you're it's everything from the driveway party to you know, the Miller Lite Oasis at Summerfest. It's just this, we love to gather and to experience entertainment. So I think that's probably what I would say is the most consistent. Mm-hmm. And so Bob, I don't know, what do you think?
Yeah, what do you got, Bob?
Well, I think there's certainly a lot to what you say. I mean, when you get back to the COVID moment, there were moments there when it was kind of gone, when we didn't have it. You know, you find yourself, I found myself signing up for the symphony subscription thing where I watched it on my video screen and listened to it every Saturday mm-hmm. night. And at the beginning of that, it was like four people on stage at any time. And then it gradually grew to like eight people on stage and it got bigger and bigger. But you find yourself missing all of that. And it through all the years, that constant has been there with the Milwaukee Symphony and the Milwaukee Ballet and the Milwaukee Repertory Theater. And there's moments where you worry about them, but they've always managed to be strong enough to succeed. And they'll come out of this pandemic and they'll be just as strong as they were before. And there are a lot of people in the city that love going to those events and they should always continue to support those arts events. And then you take the next level down and you've got all the smaller theaters that are in town and you want to make sure they can survive and thrive. And you want to make sure there's money to be given out for those people, because those little theater groups are where the bigger theater groups get like a feeder thing, if you will, mm-hmm. you know, so you don't want to miss that. It's the club dates of the big shows, you know?
Yeah. So, and we'll go Bob and then Sarah on this. If you'd have told your younger self about Milwaukee in 2021 with arts and culture, what might they go like, I don't believe you. Really? Like, wow, really?
Boy, that is a tough question. If I went, my younger self was when I first started, you know, watching it at the beginning, like I was talking about, if I would have looked back on that and seen how strong that stayed in Milwaukee and saw how that impacted my kids. And how that will continue to impact more kids down the line. I mean, that is, people should make a point of making sure their kids can see that and experience that. I don't mean push them into it, but make sure that it's there and they can find their way there, either through schools or through programs, First Stage or Milwaukee Youth Symphony Orchestra. There's a million places where they can still get that culture. That's important.
Sarah, how about you? You jumped in the DeLorean and told the younger version of yourself, and this is happening in 2021. Young Sarah would be like, what? What? Really?
Well, I mean, I can't get over that Bob didn't talk about, you know, like the fact that you'd still be booking the crazy stuff that you do. I mean, that's like, sorry. Before we go any further about my DeLorean experience and my flux capacitor, like, we gotta just like, I mean, really, Bob? Like, come on. That is so just to
yeah. Give it a yeah. Second, that's mean, true. That's true. I still get to do this.
Right? Like, we get to do this stuff is pretty.
Yeah.
And like just the changes in the music business, right? Like uh-huh. I have this, I'm really fortunate. I have an experience where I was here, left and then came back to it. Mm. And, you know, I mean, who would have thought that Billie Eilish would be the fastest pre-sale sellout in the history of the festival? Like there's just so many interesting things about the way music has changed, in particular what we do and how far advanced, you know, things have gotten and how much access there is. I mean, if you would have told us in 2020 or even, you know, 1980, just the incredible access that people have to creative tools in order to get stuff that they do out into the world. Mm-hmm. It's phenomenal. I mean, it is so phenomenal. And Milwaukee, I think, you know, from the visual arts to the music scene, I mean, it's I think sometimes we focus on what we don't have when we really should focus on what we have, which is really a robust and exciting scene, as evidenced in what all you guys do. So I think it's, you know, sky's the limit. I wish we would have embraced sky's the limit a little bit more to even push ourselves further.
You know, what Sarah's talking about is true with the technology side of it. And when it was my age and I was listening to music that I had, you know, there's a couple of radio stations I listened to. I could occasionally pick up a station in Little Rock that was doing rock music at night, or I could find, you know, something like that. My kids now, I mean, there's so many ways they find new music or the old music or something that excites me. There's so many things, not just their friends, not just radio, but there's satellite radio and there's YouTube and there's Spotify and there's everything under the sun for them to go in different directions and find the kind of music, the genres that they like. And you're right, Sarah, when I was younger, if I would have known that 40 blah, 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 blah years later, that I'd still be doing this and I'd still be excited about it. And it keeps me going.
You know, Bob, to your point, you know, my youngest daughter, Mira, is 13 years old, going in eighth grade. And when we do dinner, we let her do the playlist. It's like, play us what you're listening to. And she cues it up. And How Deep Is Your Love by the Bee Gees came up. And I like stopped and like, wait, I'm like, where? She's like, oh, you know the Bee Gees? I'm like, yeah, I know the Bee Gees. And I don't play the Bee Gees. You know, I don't play it, but I know them. You know,
right.
How do you not know the Bee Gees? I mean, they've had a career of iteration of three phases. Of like, anyway, I go, wait, how'd you come to the Bee Gees? And she watches streamers that do Minecraft and they play music in the background.
Sure.
And that was one of the tracks that they would play all the time. So to your point, it's like, what? Like that is,
eh?
And I just sort of sat there stunned. Like, wow, I didn't realize Minecraft streamers were the new DJs of influencing the tastes of their viewers and all this stuff. So to your point, like, you just don't know, right? Like,
it's interesting what a great song that must have been. That was, because it stands the test of time, right?
It's legit. A 13-year-old. I'm like, oh, I got to show you this documentary. You want to see the beat? And she's like, whatever, dad. She's only tuned up. She's like, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it.
Now you ruined the moment. Now she doesn't want to even talk. Oh, he likes it. Well, I'm out of there. You know?
I'm out. Yeah. I'm like, oh, man.
Hearing both of you talk, I have a couple of wild card questions for you. So worn on the script. So answer as you will. But I'm curious if you hear from touring artists with somewhat consistency, like what they feel like the Milwaukee audience is like how it might compare to other audiences on the road. Do you ever hear anything that's like, oh, you guys are your folks are this?
Well, I hear about it from the festival perspective, where because it's such an inexpensive ticket and they can come in here and play on a stage where they'll have 10, 12,000 people in front of them, when they normally would have 1,000 people or 600 people in front of them. And it's this rabid audience that just wants everything that they can throw off that stage at that time. And they're not used to that. And they're not used to that excitement that comes with. I use this every now and then. A lot of times when somebody pays $100 for a ticket, they sit in their seat and go, okay, show me what you got, until you show them what you got. When you're down there and it's an inexpensive night and you've come to have some fun, everybody's standing up on a bleacher and go, let's go, let's have some fun. And it becomes some fun. And then it continues for the whole show, to the fact that a lot of them, you know, they'll say, can I do 10 more minutes instead of leaving right now? So that kind of moment. So.
Yeah, I think it speaks to, you know, people, there's almost a responsibility of the fan that Milwaukee takes seriously, right? Like, you know, the vibe is the band, but it's also who you have around you and what, I mean, there, it's all the environment. And that's when Bob talks about the festival environment. We do try to create the more so that it feels bigger and because everyone vibes off that, right? You know, there's the more music, the more fun, then you've got this. I think sometimes we don't necessarily give enough credit to the physical property as well, in terms of how that contributes specifically at Summerfest. I mean, the fact that you can watch a show at the BMO Harris Pavilion and watch a sailboat behind an artist go by, I mean, that's so unique, right?
Yeah.
So, I think that the artists also love to comment on just, in a festival setting, how incredible the facilities are here versus other festivals.
Right. Yeah, the facilities are all permanent. So you're walking in and you're getting good sound and good lights, and you're not having a hard time getting to the stage to load or unload. And those are all important moments for band. And they go, oh, wait a minute, we're in downtown Milwaukee. We have this big piece of land here and we have permanent stages here. And they walk into that and they go, whoa, this is nice. This is a moment for us. Yeah. And they have fun playing. And we get, you know, a band like the Bleachers. Yeah. Jack Antonoff, he comes back every time they tour. It's like, we're coming out. You want a date? You know? and throwing an older name, Tom Petty's people used to always do that. I mean, he played here more than anybody.
Wow.
And his manager would call, not even his agent, his manager would call and say, we're going to go out this summer. You want a date? And then they would we'd be the anchor date and they'd route around us.
That's awesome.
Yeah, because he liked playing here. It was it was one of his favorite stops.
That's got music in your ears. You want a date. You want it. You're like, you know, you got free reign. We got a blank piece of paper. When do you want us?
And that's awesome. Of course you have to pay us X.
But, you know. maybe I'm over romanticizing it, but I'm just saying, I don't think you're meeting.
I'm thinking I'm like, back. I believe it wasn't X, it was X plus is what I mean the number was, yes.
I'm curious about that balance between these huge names coming through that you know, they're on your radar already, we're on their radar, like they want to come through Summerfest. Tell us more about that element of discovery as well, of like finding bands that aren't quite as big yet. And I'm sure you have countless experiences of booking someone that felt like, yeah, well, you know, it's a little bit of a risk, but they're on earlier in the evening, like, let's give them a go. And then later on, they become a huge name. Tell us more about
it. I tell you, there is a reason. There's the agents, managers, talent buyers, all of us are in this business because we really like that moment of great music. And I always use an example from agents where I've got agents that will fight with you about $1 million band, about what they're going to get and how much it is. And the next call is about a $500 band that they believe in that much. Uh-huh. And they're saying, you got to put this in. It's got to be the right spot. It's got to be before this guy. It's because they want that band to be successful. And we, on our side, I mean, every now and then somebody will hear something, and we have a music meeting about four or five of us every week, twice a week, all year round. And even though our office culture here is kind of open doors and we're yelling at each other more than using any kind of intercom when we hear something, but there'll be a piece of music somebody's playing, you go, what was that? And then they'll bring it in, and we'll all sit around and listen to it, go, well, that's something. That is really something. Let's find a spot for that somewhere. Mm. And that could be a local act, and that can be a national act. And that's that magic of discovery where here's music. It you just don't know what makes it good. It just is good, right? I mean, think about it sometime. Explain it to me. What made that good? Key change? Stop with that. It gets you from in the first four or five measures, you go, oh. And then you sit and listen to it, and then you're humming it 2 days later, and then you're listening to it again, and it you don't know what got you there, but it gets you there. Isn't that art, right? Isn't that art? Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I got to join you. I was so excited to see you guys book Joan from Arkansas on the 17th, because that's like one of those bands I found just randomly, and I just play them all the time, and I evangelize about them. And I saw that. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like somebody in that office is awesome. Cause like they only have like 5,000 views of their stuff on YouTube. Yep. Like it's pretty modest, but man, when I saw
believe
it, I was
that
like,
was David Silva in our office who picked that one up.
High fives on that. I'm like, I'm going to have the merch. I'm in the first row, 46 year old man standing for these guys, because to your point, that's how I felt when I first heard those cats on Spotify. Yeah, I was like, who are these guys? And
you know, that's what makes it what it is. Right. Yeah, I mean, so, and then you have moments where somebody brought a band to us just the other day and they go, got to be on a schedule. We're going, yeah, it's got to be on a schedule. We get it all together. And our production guy calls us this morning, guys, you know, they only have 29 minutes of music. It's like, what, what? A half hour to set it up, 29 minutes, and a half hour to tear it down. What? So it's those kind of little moments that you have too sometimes.
They'd have to run it back twice. Just do your music twice. It's fine.
Is years ago. We had a band, and they were booked, a baby band coming out, and they were booked to play at 90 minutes total, right? And they came in for the show, and the guy said something like, we only have 35 minutes of music. And we said, that's fine. Go out and play 35, take a 15 minute break, go back out and play the same 35.
Yep.
I don't have anything to put there when you're done. You know, just figure it out, guys. Figure it out.
You're not going to tell us that, band. You can't. You
no, yeah, we don't. We don't. I didn't know we were taking that story out.
Oh, but. Yeah. Sarah's like, oh, that's you on the TV. All right. Oh, that's a blind item.
Long ago, Sarah. Long ago.
You're gonna...
Yeah, it was forever ago. Wasn't
that
it?
Was
yeah.
Bruno Mars, everybody. Yeah. Bruno Mars.
Absolutely not.
Are you going to. We'll ask you again when the recording is off. So, you know, I mean, one of the most tired pandemic words is pivot, right? But perhaps no one in Milwaukee has had to pivot quite as much as you have, thinking about can we make this happen fall 2020, realizing the scope of the pandemic and needing to move towards a 3-weekend event in fall 2021, as opposed to the normal format in the summer. So talk to us about just this massive shift and what are some of the insights that you've gained so far in shifting to this 3-weekend format.
Well, I'll start by saying that Bob and the team in entertainment, this is the fourth time they've booked the event. So I think that from anyone who does what they do, it's a remarkable feat. The fact that we've got this lineup that in some cases, Bob, and I know you'll share more about this, but had, you know, bands traveled with us four times and have now landed right in the next 2-3 weeks, which is so exciting. You know, on the business side, there's so much to say about the why the shift makes sense for us in terms of, you know, we, and Bob, I know, jump in here because you know it as well as I do. The way in which festivals evolve and really any fans looking for just a power-packed day. And so when we were able to eliminate a few of the weekdays, we took that, all those resources, poured them into Bob's entertainment budget, and we're able to add national talent as well as, you know, as you said, Mac, emerging, like really great emerging talent. And that's complicated, right? That's expensive and complicated. And so we were able to leverage those budgets into the 9 days. And also, from our standpoint, opens up a larger booking window, which I know Bob can speak to as well. Mm-hmm. So in terms of what fans will see, I think, you know, come early, come often, because the lineup is so strong. Because we just were able to rely on those relationships and deliver after now the fourth time a really strong lineup. So Bob, do you want to add anything to that? I mean, I know we could do a whole podcast on why the 3-weekend model worked for us, but we'll try to contain ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, what Sarah said is true. We built the festival, the lineup up, and then tore it down. This is the fourth time, right? Summer of 2020. Fall of 2020, summer of 21, now we're in fall of 21. And we think fall of 21 is going to hold. So we're excited about that. Some of the bands actually were with us the whole time.
Ooh.
You know, they were scheduled. And as we had to change our schedule, they had to change their touring schedule. So we were going from the summer of 20 into the fall of 20. They're going, well, this is perfect because we just changed our tour from the summer of 20 to the fall of 20. And they kind of came with us. We lost a couple acts that we now have in 2022. I mean, Justin Bieber's an example that he's now on our schedule and announced and moved for the summer of 2022. And we picked up some bands like the Hella Mega Tour, which is the Green Day, Fall Out Boy, Weezer, and a few other bands that we were lucky enough to pick up that decided to move their tour dates into the fall. So that has worked. The ground stages also, we had some bands that came in and some bands that fell out. So we've been lucky doing it that way. The 3-day concept was started not just, I think it was started the second iteration of the festival that we were going to do in fall that time. And we liked that idea. And we had the opportunity, as Sarah said, to take that talent budget and move it into national acts, not the biggest names, but national names at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a lot of these stages. So you get a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, when you get to come out early and start seeing bands that are national level, at songs you know from 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and continue all through the day, and all the different genres of music continuing on the ground. So that can keep it exciting for the fan to come down. The ticket prices are still extremely low, so they get a chance to come out and have some fun and listen to all different genres of music all day long. Now, the Wednesday nights leading into it, we have an amphitheater show every Wednesday night of those weekends. And that gets you a free Summerfest ticket to get you in the grounds and any other night also. So it's an excitement level that we get to build And it may not be the way the dates were before, but we like this a lot. And you will see this again in the future.
Was it like, hey, this is the meeting. I wasn't at the meeting. It was like, how about three weekends? Did people like throw food at that person, or people like, you know, like, was it like immediately, or was it kind of, because I imagine for doing something for so long a certain way, right? There's an attachment, there's muscle memory. Was it really reacted well, or like, give me a second, I need to get right with it. It is a mind shift, right? You describe
For us, it was for the music side of it, the booking side of it. It's great because Sarah also mentioned now we have a bigger window.
Yeah.
Now the window is 3 weeks long. Even though we're not open on the Monday, Tuesday, and the Wednesday for the grounds, but now we have a bigger window. So a band may not have been working in a small window before, but now we might overlap into part of their tour, so we can pick up dates on the end and pick up dates at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something to be said about people get a chance to go back, recoup for a couple of days. Not just their employees, but the fans.
Yeah.
They get to go home for a couple of days, live their lives, and go, oh, look, here's the lineup for weekend two. We're coming out on Saturday, or we're coming over there on Friday. It gives people a chance to, it gives them a little bigger window to enjoy the festival.
But also, Sarah, like, they're staffing, right? You've got it's not just the music. You've got these vendors, you got all the different facilities and all the corporate supports, right? Because they've got their program. From that end, Sarah, was that a big shift in terms of being able to do all that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that in the context of we're not going to be able to do it at all versus, hey, let's look at shifting. And so, you know, I think that what we all appreciate now is just the how much we missed the experience in 2020. So I think that and we have some of the best partners in the world. And some of these vendors, some of these partners, I mean, I'm pretty convinced that the folks at Miller Brewing Company were in the room when Summerfest was invented, right? So, I mean, that's a 50-year relationship. And so they, just everyone's been really, I think, like you said, it was sort of a, you know, okay. And then it became like, oh, we can do this and we can do that. And so it really does. I think another sort of outshoot of this is, you know, we look at things like Summerfest Tech, right? Who would have thought 5 years ago, 10 years ago, that we would have an emerging tech event that really came from Milwaukee's evolution around all the technology businesses we have and how many people use the festival as a recruiting tool, right? So I think that it's how we remain relevant and how we continue to push ourselves in order to serve Milwaukee's needs. Because again, this thing is it's a nonprofit organization that runs Summerfest. It's not, it's not Live Nation, it's not AEG, great companies, great partners of ours. But at the end of the day, we're an independent, and we have that commitment to making sure that we're serving Milwaukee and remaining accessible. We needed to do that in order to keep to our mission. So
I heard that, Sarah, like Summerfest Tech, it's sort of speaking to a talent retention strategy in a sense, right? Like, we're trying to attack talent to the city, and like, what a better platform than this amazing experience. And so that's like a new innovation, right? This notion of how do we be more aligned to really attract this audience and remind them of how great this could be. Is that, am I tracking, Sarah?
Yeah, you are. And I would say that we got real comfortable real quick. We are not technologists. We are not content experts in this space, but what we saw was, and I think, you know, maybe it's a little romantic in my own mind, but it was this idea when Summerfest began that, you know, all the breweries came together and said, okay, we understand Oktoberfest does this amazing thing for Munich. How do we create something similar here? Mm-hmm. Well, we had the same, and again, maybe a fairy tale in my own mind, but certainly one that's been supported through many, many stories. It's just, we saw the same kind of level of energy with Summerfest Tech, where now all of a sudden, all these companies are coming to us saying, hey, we could do this because we do use the festival as a great recruitment tool to get people to Milwaukee and experience all the great things that are happening here, the festival, and then, right? So.
Neat. And I think we were talking a little bit earlier, there was a show last night when we're recording, right? I believe Maroon 5.
Mm-hmm. You bet.
Somewhere Adam Levine is having a cheese curd, right? That happened, I think. That probably happened. He only had one though, because that guy's wafy. That guy, he knows. But in all seriousness, that was a great opportunity to also, one of the innovations is, you know, in the times we're living in, making sure people have that are coming, right? They have to have a vaccination or a negative COVID test, right?
That's
a process you had to start. You had to test last night because you had 14,000 people go through that. And Bob, could you sort of speak to how that looked and sort of what are you anticipating when you got to multiply that by many stages and many experiences?
You know, I think we had that show was about a week or something after we made the announcement that we were doing it. First of all, Lollapalooza did it first, where they did the vaccinations and COVID testing. And when we talked to those people down there after the experience, and they said, well, you know, we figured 90% of the people that came here had a vaccination, 8% had a test, and then 2% we had to figure out it when they got there. And we thought, well, those numbers that's pretty good. And we feel health is the most important thing here, for health for our fans and health for the bands and health for our staff and health everybody to stay healthy, to be able to do this, to keep doing this event. And the COVID situation has gotten worse, let's be honest with it, out there in the public. Yeah. So we want to make sure that we can do this event and have as many people there as we can and have them all feel healthy when they're there. So, I mean, we still have a mask plan. If you're indoors for us is like the merch building or bathrooms or things like that. People should carry that along. And if you're under 12, you still have to wear a mask, but we feel we're doing the right thing. And we feel it's important for our fans to be able to feel safe when they walk through those gates. The messaging has gotten out. I think we've been ahead of it. And I think people are starting to understand that it is what it is and we have to do this. Now, we have some refunds. We understand that some of the shows, some people decided they wanted the refunds. We opened a refund window. We were fair about that. So I think going forward, it's going to work out great for us. And now there's some great tickets people can buy if they want. They're going to be back on the market.
Well, and you talked about before, I think you used the word pivot and you talk about the word nimble. I mean, I think that and kudos to everyone involved with moving things and changing things. It's been such a lesson in, getting beyond your typical protocols and really thinking really creatively and how you can solve problems quickly. And so that we can throw a great event. So it's the event is, and the goal is always our North Star. And so, and even if you look at what's happened in the past month in this community, it's dramatically different. Yeah. And so it's remaining nimble. It's thinking about people first, and making sure that we're able to do something that is going to be truly remarkable when we open.
It's also a reminder for me of another sort of meta example of just being a society. Hey, can we all do this? Let's all do this, right? And we're gonna have 3 weekends to see. Can we all do this and have share space again, right? In this time and celebrate together. And if we can all pull together, we're gonna have a live, an amazing 3 weekends of music.
Agreed. Agreed.
Well, as we turn to wrapping up and sending you back out to your days of shouting each other through the hallway and planning for a wonderful, safe few weekends in September. We want to close with our favorite question of the podcast, where we bestow upon you a temporary but very real power of being the czar of arts and culture for Milwaukee. So with this power, both of you get a turn, dual leadership position. What would you do with that power? What sort of policies might you pass to make some change?
I'll start, Bob, and give you the last word. In our family, we have a 7-year-old. I would make sure that every child has access to as much arts education as they wanted. I think that is, it's transformative, it's important, and understandably, there's a lot of priorities in education, but I think that the opportunity for children to express themselves is something that is, it creates a whole child. And that's what I would do if I had the power for a day, but then I would hand it over to my good colleague and friend, Bob Babish, and he would do what?
I would agree with you wholeheartedly about funding to help education for the youth of the city. But I also would want to make sure that we nurture the small theater events and the club music events and bring jazz clubs back to town. And some of this stuff has to be subsidized somewhere, somehow. But we don't want to lose those small moments of creating art that are around the city. It's important, and it's important for all the citizens, and it's important for the people that create the art.
Well, it was a glorious reign that you both had as arts and culture czar.
Thanks so much.
It was beautiful. It was
nothing.
You know, and
now it's over.
You weren't sent out in pitchforks and torches, Les Mis style, but rather just because me and Lindsay just don't have that much juice. That being said, we are committed to Imagine MK to keep that legacy going and to make sure how can we ensure that all of Milwaukee's children get invited, engaged to express themselves through the arts and become powerful young people and adults. And then conversely, Bobby, what I'm hearing you say is we need an ecosystem. It's great to have the big pillars and we're a great city that has that, but you also need other parts of the ecosystem, like these small quote unquote mom and pop shops, if you will, right? These independent shops that are hyper local, pushing the form, right? And no also doubt. Creating a talent pipeline, yeah. right? To be arts administrators for these other places and all these other things. Right. So we're committed to that. I think me and Lindsay are on for it. We know it's not an overnight thing, but you guys.
We need 13-year-olds listening to the Bee Gees. Don't forget that.
That's right.
Sure, Bear gives ecstatic that he gets 0.002 cents every time that gets it. That happens. That being said, thank you so much, Bob and Sarah, for not just being on the pod, but again, for your leadership. Like I said, September 17th, I got Joan and Bleachers. I'm queued up. I'm showing you this. It's right here. I'm ready to rock.
Look at that.
There we
look
go.
I've been carving this up, and I know Lindsay and Dave and I are going to fight about what night was the best, and I'm sure we're all correct, but in your minds, we're all correct. So thanks so much for being on the pod.
Thank you.
Yeah, Bob loves feedback on bands, so you just keep it coming.
Just keep throwing it out there. That's right.
You just keep sending him ideas and critiques of the bands. It's great. It's just awesome.
Yeah. Thanks so much. Man, that was a lot of fun. I know I say that a lot, but there was so much energy on that for two people who are in the heart of trying to make this thing happen. They were so generous and energetic about this. So.
Oh, absolutely. Not drained at all. I'm trying to, you know, if I was in a similar situation, I might be a little bit more ornery at this stage in the planning process, but sounds like, I mean, I think we heard through their answers, they're thrilled to be back, right? They're thrilled to have that experience of being able to welcome audiences again and get to this place. Of course, not without its stressors and concerns, but.
Yeah. And I have to imagine, right. They executed the Maroon 5 show, you know, and it's like a warm up. Right. And I'm sure they're gaining confidence sort of in the, processes. And I'm sure that just whets the appetite. Cause you got to think, wow, we're going to do this Maroon 5 concert times 100 or something. So, and then what's that going to be like? It's going to be awesome. So grateful for them sharing the insights and so many fun. I loved them just dropping these little, I didn't ever heard about Summerfest Tech. That's such a brilliant concept, you know?
I know.
So that was,
we
got to
learn more.
We look forward to finding out.
And now they've opened the door. I'm about to email Bob band suggestions on the regular. So looking forward to that.
Look forward to the Lindsay Sheridan stage next 2022. It's just curated by Lindsay. She's going to come out and be like, hello, friends. And then it'll be all your favorite Punch Brothers and whatnot. You know, so they'll be all there.
That's about right.
Yeah. And again, get in early now. Buy your ticket hashtag Lindsay Stage when you buy the next ticket. Maybe we'll get enough demand for them to like actually hire Lindsay.
You know what? This campaign I can get behind. This Lindsay campaign I can get behind. Let's
Lindsay
make it
Sheridan
happen.
Stage 2022. Let's do it. Otherwise, in the meantime, listener, thanks so much for hanging with us. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the pod, please share with others, post about it on social, or leave a rating and review, or contact us directly at pod@imaginemke.org.
Imagine This Podcast is a team effort produced, edited, and hosted by MacArthur Antigua, David Lee, and Lindsay Sheridan. Is the flagship of the Imagine MKE Podcast Network.
Make sure you also listen and subscribe to us, as well as listen to back episodes of Black Imagination and Arts Forward MKE, all of which can be found at imaginemke.org/podcasts.
To catch all the latest from Imagine MKE, hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at @Imagine_MKE or Facebook at Imagine MKE.
Thanks again. We'll catch you next Tuesday. Run it back with some more terrific folks from our abundant arts and culture sector. Until then, voices carry. Bye.
Bye. All right. Are we starting over?
That's yes.
All the way over?
Okay. Yes.
All the way over.
Please.
We'll try it.
Please. Please, God.
Try it. Try not to make fun of my...
We're going to make fun of it. As soon as you say try not to, that's immediately I'm going to make fun of it. So...